This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
This is episode 326 of the Horses in the Morning Show for December 29th. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida. Good morning, horse world. This episode is sponsored by Equestrian Collections for the whole universe of equestrian shopping at your fingertips at equestriancollections.com. As you know, we are on holiday this week, and today we have for you Jamie's four most memorable interviews for 2015. I will do mine on Thursday for you, and also on tomorrow's show. On Wednesday's show, the auditors requested a recap of the scooter origin story all the way back to the beginning. So Jennifer dug through the archives and put that one together for you. Should be a lot of fun. We hope you enjoy these best of, or these most memorable interviews that Jamie picked out for her year for 2015. Have a great day, everybody. Well, while we're talking about horses with good names, we should, of course, talk about a certain horse that we've had the owner on before. He's coming back today. But I don't think he'll mind if I play the end of a certain race from last week.
American Pharaoh by a head, and Frosted is taking it to him on the far turn. Frosted is right alongside of American Pharaoh, and now Victor Espinosa has to ask American Pharaoh to go, and Frosted continues to cling to him on the outside as they round the far turn. They're four lengths ahead of Keen Ice, and as they turn for home, American Pharaoh has lost the lead at the top of the stretch. Frosted on the outside is now in front, but American Pharaoh is battling on from the inside. He's showing all this fight with one furlong to run. And here on the far outside comes Keen Ice with a late threat. American Pharaoh put away Frosted. He has to deal with Keen Ice. Keen Ice has got him. Keen Ice has won the Travers over American.
Boy, I'll tell you what.
Good Lord.
Larry Comas can call a race. We have Jerry Crawford on here of Donegal Racing. Of course, the owners of Keen Ice. Wow, he can call a race, can he?
You know, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
Second, let me wait for my goosebumps to die down here again
from
listening to your, you know, because that's the first time I've, oh, no, maybe it's not.
No, I didn't think it
but
would
anyway.
I didn't think it would be, but for the audience's sake, I had to play it again. You know, congratulations. We've had you on a couple times before after Keen Ice had, you know, didn't fare so well as he did this last week, but boy, you must be flying high this week.
It's been really extraordinary. And by the way, I agree with you about Larry Comas. He called a very fair race, giving credit where it was due. I went up and thanked him and congratulated him on such a good call. The next day, it's fair to say that we got more airtime from Larry Comas in the final furlong than we did from NBC in 2 hours.
That is true, isn't it?
But that, you know what? That's absolutely fair under the circumstance. And that, you know, the truth is that if American Pharaoh, what great sportsman the Zayats were to bring him to the Travers, if he had not come, it would have been like us winning a consolation prize. But because he came, the spotlight could not have been brighter. And, you know, we've obviously benefited from that tremendously in terms of people's awareness and familiarity with Donegal Racing and with Keen Ice. And our horse is pretty, I can assure you, pretty well known now around the world.
Well, you know, I didn't think about that, but you're right. If he hadn't come, it would have just been another, it would have been on the racing forum, you know, and the racing websites would have covered who won the Travers, but nobody would have cared.
Exactly. Yeah. Here's the thing.
You would have cared.
American
you would have won the
Pharaoh.
Money anyway, but, you know.
But, you know, look, we're all in this for those special moments, and it's a special moment because he was there. And the thing about American Pharaoh's Triple Crown is he took a racing story and made it a story in the general populace.
Right.
And that just happens rarely in horse racing. And when it does, all of a sudden you have so many more people watching. I can give you one. My mind is still blown by this. For 4.5 hours after the Travers on Saturday, Keen Ice was the number one thing trending worldwide.
Wow.
I mean, that could never have happened without American Pharoah and without his prior accomplishments. So, by the way, I barely even know what trending means, but my kids assure me it's a big deal.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. Well, you know, we were with you, and I'm so appreciative of you coming on today. Matter of fact, when Jennifer said you were going to come on, I was like, well, he's a good guy, because I'm sure he's got you got NBC and everybody else asking you. But we were there for you at the very before all of this. So
yes.
Well, anything I can ever do to help promote a sport I love and these magnificent creatures, you can always count on me.
Well, now, of course, American Pharoah, we haven't talked about this yet in the show today. The owners, who we've had on too, have come out and said that they are thinking about pointing him toward the Breeders' Cup. That must
Shocker.
Make your day.
It does. There's an interesting little tug of war going on between Coolmore, who owns the breeding rights, and the Zayats, who own the racing rights.
I bet there is.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm sure Coolmore would have loved it if he had retired after the Triple Crown or retired after the Haskell on the highest possible note. And let me tell you something. People are going to make this into the American Pharoah Keen Ice rematch in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but here's the truth of the matter. There are other horses in that race at least as good as us, right? So there's no guarantee that either one of us will win in the Breeders' Cup Classic. A lot will depend, just as it did in the Travers, and how the race shapes
Jerry,
up.
Jerry, we have the opportunity here to, you talk about, you know, bringing racing out into the mainstream. We have the opportunity here for an old-fashioned 1920s match race. A special Breeders' Cup match race where you guys are on trains going across the country. The horses are on the trains. You're doing whistle-stop tours. This could be great, all the way to Kentucky.
Never gonna.
Yeah, well, good luck. Good luck selling that to Coolmore. unless there are 15 of the best mares in the world waiting at every whistle stop, I don't think you're gonna make that happen.
You know, American Pharoah wouldn't mind that, I'm sure.
Right.
Now, Jerry, you guys, you know, obviously you're in for the Breeders' Cup. Congratulations, by the way. Keen Ice, I don't think he's getting enough credit for just how incredibly hard he had to run. I mean, American Pharoah saw eye to eye with Frosted and kept pushing. And then, you know, your horse probably went, Keen Ice was quite a bit to the outside. So he ran even farther. And I think it was like the fastest quarter for American Pharoah. And then Keen Ice beat him, you know, so
yeah.
You guys should get a lot of credit for just how incredibly hard and how hard he ran, and Del Romans are training him just to the just nth degree, just being ready for that race. You guys are pointing towards the Breeders' Cup Classic, correct? Because you're in now.
We are. And I appreciate what you just said about Keen Ice, but I would say it about Keen Ice and about American Pharoah and about Frosted. Here's the reality. And by the way, we did run 40 feet longer than American Pharoah. So there's 4.5 lengths and we won by a length. So we actually ran 5.5 lengths faster. Nobody will ever know that, but the three of us and your listeners today, in all likelihood. But American Pharoah ran his co-best buyer lifetime at a classic distance. Mm-hmm. So he ran 1.5 seconds faster than he did when he won the Kentucky Derby. So there's no criticism that would be fair of his effort last Saturday. I mean, when the horse runs as fast as he's ever run, I don't know how people can criticize him for having an off day, but
now,
in any event.
Now, you're pointing towards the Breeders' Cup and the Classic, obviously, correct? And
that's correct. And, of course, we're going to have, in addition to American Pharoah and Keen Ice, we'll have Beholder, who turned in the filly, who turned in that unbelievable performance at the Pacific Classic. Mm-hmm. By the way, she came within 2 ticks of tying the world record in the Pacific, the all-time record in the Pacific Classic, which, by the way, just happens to be held by Dullahan, another Donegal racing horse. So that was fun to see her explode to that level of performance. We'll have Honor Code in all likelihood. So, and then we'll have six more horses that people have never heard of, any of them who could win. So, if these horses all show up and go into the gate, this is going to be the most spectacular Breeders' Cup Classic in history. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
And how I think cool I'm going to bet
that it's at Keeneland too. Jamie. I just wanted to throw that in there. I just think it's very cool that it's there.
No, I was just going to tell everybody, if you're going to bet, if you're a betting man, which, as we know, I am a betting woman, I would say get a Superfecta between Keen Ice, American Pharaoh Beholder, and Honor Code. And then you're guaranteed to win, right?
Oh, I should listen. I should listen every time.
Don't do it. Don't listen to me. No, I think it's going to be such an absolutely exciting race. Are you guys planning on doing anything in between? Any shorter races, any classics, anything between now and the Breeders' Cup? I'm curious about the thought process with that. Do you rest them? Do you train them? What's the thought process for this long of a stretch?
Well, you've just asked the key question. Here's the problem. Horses almost never win the Breeders' Cup Classic off 60 days rest. Mm-hmm. Almost every winner, I think 18 of the last 20 winners had raced within 4 or 5 weeks of the Breeders' Cup Classic. So there's one piece of history. The other piece of history is that all of us who went to the Travers, and by the way, we went there knowing we would face this problem on the other side. Mm-hmm. We've had hard campaigns, harder campaigns than the others, the older horses. And so really, do you want to squeeze the lemon again between now and the Breeders' Cup Classic? Mm-hmm. It's the rare horse who can stand up to that. Now, I actually think if one of these horses can stand up to that, it's us. Our speed figures have improved every single race in 2015. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anybody, regardless of whether they think Keen Ice is the best horse, best three-year-old horse in the world, they would at least say he's been the most steadily improving.
He's getting faster. And
there's no doubt he's getting faster, and he's very, very sound. But you can still only do so much. And expect so much before you get a bounce. And so what happens if we run on October 3rd, say in the Jockey Club or wherever, and he turns in another big performance, you know, that bounce word starts to come into your mind as being a potential at some point. Horses are not capable of getting better forever their entire life. So, and by the way, we also have the Dubai World Cup in our sights. Late March of 16. So
I don't know why you would go over and do that race. No,
I mean, $10 million.
I have ten million reasons. Yeah,
yeah, I bet you do.
And by the way, I'm sure you guys have been there. It's an extraordinary experience.
Dubai? Yeah, I go every year.
Hey, just charge it to your network. No problem.
Yeah, there you go.
Donegal Racing is putting my bill.
Jerry, you're breaking up, but we have to go now.
Understand.
Carry on about the race. I'm interested. So there is the bounce thing. There's the whole, do we go, do we not go? What are you leaning towards? This is like the biggest decision probably in Keen Ice's career.
It is. But the great news is, more often than not, the horse will tell you what he or she wants to do. In this case, we'll wait until three Saturdays from last Saturday. We'll breeze him. If he is breezing well, but not jumping out of his skin, dying to do more, well, then probably we'd train him up to the Breeders' Cup Classic. If, on the other hand, he's fighting the rider and wanting to kick down the stall, then sometimes it's better to run him and let him release that energy and rebuild it rather than trying to contain it for that long. So Probably 7 days or 21 days from last Saturday, you'll probably get some indication from us of what's next.
Okay. Well, I want to get back to, before we run out of time, too, because Jamie and Jennifer and I have all lived in Lexington for a period of time. Jamie actually breezed horses over at Keeneland. You know, do we think Keeneland's one of the coolest tracks around, but do serious race people think that, too?
Yeah, Jamie, sorry you had to go through that awful experience of being in Keeneland early every morning.
That's terrible. Pretty awful. You know, I got trained over at the training track, and then they're like, oh, we're moving to Keeneland. I'm like, okay, let's go.
Yeah. My wife, Linda, used to say, every time Jerry visits Keeneland for the morning breezes, it costs us $1 million.
You know what? Horses, I take the horses when they're done racing and retrain them, Jerry, and I don't know how many horses I would take from Keeneland, like, because they're just all pretty. They don't let ugly horses in the backside.
Yeah, no
of Keeneland.
Ugly horses allowed.
They're all pretty, I want to take them all. And it didn't cost me $1 million, but it did cost me a lot for sure.
But you got $1 million in psychic return. I know that. You know, I'll say this about Keeneland, and I'm just obviously back from being up at Saratoga for most of that meet. You know, day in, day out, the quality of racing is better at Saratoga than any place else in the world. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But for sheer beauty and aesthetic impact, and particularly the impact it has on the women in our sport, I think Keeneland is number one. You know, Linda, from day one, that's been her favorite place to go racing. And so it's going to be a very special Breeders' Cup to be there.
Just, I can't even.
By the way, Donegal has 200 people signed up already. So you're going to see a lot of green and yellow at the Breeders' Cup.
Oh, there you go.
Can you put another couple on that list? Yeah. I mean, what's it going to hurt?
we'll sneak you in a suitcase and keep it handy for Dubai.
We could buy green and yellow.
I'm pretty sure
we can
do that.
Yeah.
It sounds great.
Jerry, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. What's Donegal Racing's website? Is it DonegalRacing.com?
DonegalRacing.com, exactly. Okay. Exactly right. Right now we're putting together, we only do one partnership a year. It's very small, usually 8 horses. Last year we bought 7 colts and 1 filly. Of the 7 colts, we had 4 of the 7 on the Kentucky Derby Trail, and all the filly did was run in the Kentucky Oaks. So we continue to enjoy a strike rate that's pretty amazing, and I'm very proud of our team. We have such good people working with us, and you know, we've kind of brought the Moneyball approach to horse racing from baseball, and we're very mathematically driven in the way we select our horses, and Keen Ice was one of those that just jumped off the charts at us, so pretty exciting.
Is Brad Pitt a part of this whole Moneyball thing? Because I'm in.
He should be. That's a very good suggestion.
We do have
some pretty well-known people who follow us and are involved in this. So that's exciting.
I assume Brad's going to be in the movie. You know, you would assume.
Well, right? He'd have to play me, right?
That's right.
Oh, God, I hope my wife's not listening.
She hopes you're serious.
Yeah.
Jerry, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. You stopping by again, and we'll talk to you again, let's say, after the Breeders' Cup.
Okay, and listen, one last thing.
Yeah.
We couldn't do what we do if people like you didn't do what you do. And you're growing the sport, you're creating interest, and we're all very grateful to you as well.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Jerry Crawford, Donegal Racing. Take care, Jerry.
Hi there, everybody. This is Chris Duggan at Equestrian Collections, and I'd just like to take brief moments of your time to wish you all a super Merry Christmas this year from me and also from all of our staff here. We're still being very, very busy Christmas elves today, but by the time you're listening to this, hopefully we'll all be back at home with our feet up and returning to doing some packing, which after the thousands and thousands of boxes we've packed, maybe we won't do the Christmas wrapping, but I just wanted to stop a moment and thank you all very, very much for buying from us, for being our customers, also listening to some of the episodes that we've done with Glenn on products. So I hope you all have a wonderful, wonderful holiday.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And American Pharoah broke okays on the outside of Horses in Dorfman. Here comes American Pharoah, and he sweeps up on the far outside. And they're into the stretch. And it's American Pharoah who is taking the lead on the outside. In between Horses is firing line. Dorfman is down at the rail as they come into the final furlong. American Pharoah, firing line, not done yet. And these two come into the final 16. It's American Pharoah in front, firing line. Dorfman is third, Frostman is fourth. Coming to the finish, American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. And it's Mr. Z who's out the best. American Pharoah on the inside. Thunders on through nine, and they're coming to the top of the stretch. Three quarters in 1:11 and 2, and they're into the stretch in the slot at Pimlico. And American Pharoah has pulled away to a 2.5 length lead over Dividing Rod. And then it's Dorfman, tail of Verve, a huge long shot, is making a move on the far outside. But American Pharoah is all by himself. He is 5 lengths in front as they come to the wire. And American Pharoah and Victor Espinosa have won the Preakness over Taylor Bird.
They're off in the Belmont Stakes. Not a great start for American Pharoah, but he will be sent to the lead by Victor Espinosa. So he waits no longer. Right to the front for American Pharoah around the far turn. And American Pharoah continues to lead the way. He's on top by 3/4 of the length. Mook Tahij is off the rail. And now he's a length behind in second. And American Pharoah kicks away. American Pharoah has opened up a 2-length lead as they come to the top of the stretch. And Frosted has moved up into second. And they're into the stretch. And American Pharoah makes his run for glory as they come into the final furlong. Frosted is second with 1/8 of a mile to go. American Pharoah's got a 2-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Woo! Every time I hear that, are you kidding me? I start all over with the goosies and the tears. Oh, my gosh. And I bet somebody does not get sick of hearing that. And that is Justin Zayat. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining us. You can't be sick of hearing that.
No, I can hear you play it again if you want. I can hear it all day.
Of course, we're talking to Justin Zayat, one of the owners, racing and stallion manager of Zayat Stables of American Pharoah. My God, you've had a good year.
It's been unbelievable. The last 2 months have been like the craziest, most surreal experience of my life. I could never imagine to be happening, but it's all because of one really, really special horse, and we're blessed, we're thankful every day.
Are you still there, Jamie?
I'm still here. Yep. I'm sorry, I lost. There we go. So
can you hear me?
Yes,
now I can. So tell us, Justin, you're a student at NYU. What do you want to be when you grow up? I mean, my God, you own a Triple Crown winner.
This is exactly what I want to do. You know, I've been working through my whole career. Since I've been in the beginning of NYU, I've actually been the racing and stallion manager. So this is something I've been doing in tune with school the whole entire time, trying to balance my time. So I've been waiting to graduate. So this is what I want to do. And I don't think there could be any way to come into my career better than winning the Triple Crown. I hope it's not downhill from here.
I hope you get some sort of valedictorian or some sort of special award because whatever they give you. So when do you graduate?
I graduate, you listen to this. I won the Derby on a Saturday, the first Saturday night. I had to come back after the Derby from Saturday night, sit down on Sunday and study for my last two finals that were going to be between the Derby and the Preakness. So during the 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness, I had to study for finals, which was like the hardest thing you could imagine. And then after that, I took my last final the Thursday before the Preakness. Literally walked out of the Preakness, drove down to Baltimore, and graduated the day, like 2 days after the Preakness.
Oh my god! Oh, it's you poor thing.
A little busy of a time during that.
How could you concentrate? I couldn't concentrate on a normal day in college. How about you? I mean, how do you do that?
I
mean, jeez.
I don't know. You know, I'm just to myself. I'm like out here on a roll. You know, I've come so far. It's all pure test justice. Just push it through. You know, it's so hard to take my mind off winning the Derby and then looking ahead at the Preakness and just like emotions, and you're just such on a cloud nine. But I just screw my head on straight for like a good 4 days to sit down and buckle up. And I just said, Justin, do this, and the rest could just be all fun.
Well, he had to do it because otherwise he could have got fired from his job.
That's right. So.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the big boss would have came after me.
Didn't want to screw that up. So talk exactly. to us a little bit about your relationship with American Pharoah. It sure looks like he's a big old giant pony. I mean, my gosh, everybody's leading him around and feeding him treats and letting him pet him and just awesome.
It's unbelievable. He's a big pet, and I think he knows who he is. He knows he's a champion. He knows everyone loves him, and he's the real deal. And I think he likes it. You know, he likes people. You know, he could bring a little newborn baby up to him. I saw once Regina Pravnik brought her little baby up to him, and he loved him. He loved the old people. He loved anyone. He's just such a lovable horse. What makes it so special is that we've always loved him. Not that it's so obvious to say, oh, now there's a triple crown winner, everyone loves him. But no, we really love this horse from the day he was born. You know, for something about him, cliched is something more special. But everyone, he's gone through farms before he ever raced, and every single person who had him, we're just like, there's something I love about this horse. He is special, and he gave every single person a good feeling. So, you know, I've had a connection from him from the very beginning when he was born through watching him grow up, you know, but I can't tell you, I thought he was going to win the Triple Crown, but I always knew he was a really nice quality horse that we were going to have fun winning some stakes. So once you know, up to that, it's just.
You say that, and you did know because Justin, I watched a video, I think it was on YouTube, of American Pharoah
breeding on the farm as a 2-year-old.
Yup, that's the one. And you can hear in the background, he starts breezing. And I think your dad was dropping the S-bomb, like, holy seat, holy. Yep. And then I hear Justin go, that horse scares me.
When he worked that day, I always knew he was good. But when he worked that day, we brought all our trainers to the farm. We had about 30. 35 2-year-olds working on the farm. They're really nice ones. You know, El Kabir was there, Mr. G was there. A lot of good horses we have this year. We're all working on the farm, and just they all work really, really impressive, nice. But then Pharoah came out, and everyone was just like, "Oh my god!" Like everyone's jaws dropped instantly, and that's everyone just like, "I want this horse." Some trainers like, "I'll give you my daughter if you send me this horse." every single person wanted the horse. And, actually, you know, I've had Pioneer the Mad was trained by Bob Baffer. We've had a lot of success with Bob, and it kind of just, you know, the Breeders. I was thinking more along Breeders Cup at the time before even Kentucky Derby, so that's why we sent him to Bob in the West Coast there. But you know, he did a superb job with his whole career.
He really has. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you. So I watched. I teach, you know, some teenagers riding lessons, and I watch the pretty much every race with a room full of teenage girls, and some are at 19 and some all the way down to, you know, 15. And every single one of them, when they saw you on the screen, they go, "Is he single?" So I have to ask you if you're single, because all these girls thought you were just the cutest thing.
I have a girlfriend.
He was you're breaking up, Justin. We didn't get the answer.
Hear me?
Oh, you're breaking up. Yeah, there. That's a little better. Yep.
I am taken, unfortunately.
All right, girls. Sorry. Simmer down.
Sorry, ladies. No, I'm just kidding. But I have a girlfriend for the last year and a half.
Is she a horse person?
She just didn't come along after the Derby and the Preakness and everything.
Oh, I'm sure you've had a few offers after that, Justin.
She loves horses as well. You know, she's not shooting born in the industry like any of us. I actually met her in NYU. But she's, trust me, living by being with me all the time, you're going to become a horse person because it's really on my mind 24/7.
She has a GPS tracker on Justin now to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, exactly. I wear an ankle bracelet now.
That's great.
As long as you understand that's what's going on, then that's good. So take us back to American Pharoah. What's next for him as the racing manager? Are we pointing him to the Classic?
That's the long-term goal is obviously, you know, to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. That's the grand plan because no other Triple Crown winner has ever been able to win the Breeders' Cup because it was done. Breeders' Cup was made after the last Triple Crown winner has run. So, you know, to win the Breeders' Cup Classic would be a grand slam. But right now we're only focusing on one race at a time. The next race is going to be the Haskell, August 2nd in Monmouth. And then after that, who knows? You know, the Travers could be up in the air, the Pennsylvania Derby. There's all a lot of. But we're just going to really, really let the horse tell us, take it one, I know that sounds cliche, take it one race at a time and let the horse tell you, but really, we're just going to let him tell us when he's ready.
I assume when you're in this position, tracks from all over the country are begging you to come to their races.
No, well, everyone. Every single person wants American Fair to come to their track. You got congressmen calling to bring them to their stage. You know, every single person, because it's unbelievably cool. You know, I never thought like something this would happen, and now, you know, you have the horse that everyone wants. So you kind of make the calls, you say what you want, and they're going to basically do what you want. So it's pretty cool. But at the same time, it's also a big responsibility to own a horse like American Fairy. Now you have.
Yeah, you can't screw it up.
That's right. Exactly. You know, but we take a responsibility. Now, I guess, we're more visible owners out there. So whatever we do is going to be under the microscope also. So we have to really make sure that whatever we do, you know, we're in good taste and we want to really remember American Pharoah, who he was.
Oh, Justin, we're losing you a little bit again. I just wanted to...
Sorry about that. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you need to take some of those winnings and get a new cell phone, okay?
I don't even know.
Justin, I have one thing. I follow you on Twitter. By the way, you need to follow him on Twitter. It's Justin Zayat, Z-A-Y-A-T. And I noticed yesterday, you guys just got a couple of really cute horses into the stable, a Creative Cause filly and a Dialed In colt.
Correct. You know, it's the auction season now. Just because we won the Triple Crown doesn't mean, you know, now I've won the Triple Crown, it was so much fun, I want to do it again. You know, so right now I'm trying to go buy the next Triple Crown. I'm going to try to buy the next Triple Crown winner. So for the sale season now, so for the next couple of months, we're kind of gearing and stocking up on our crop for the next year.
Well, there were three in the 70s, so there could be three in this decade, I guess. I mean, you know, not to take anything away from AP.
I'm just so happy to own one horse as American Pharoah.
Before we let you go, I've seen so many things from California Chrome fans, and I'm a California Chrome fan, that are saying, you know, it'll be the race of the century if we could get these two horses up against each other. To me, I mean, there's obviously one horse that's better than the other, but are you looking forward to maybe seeing him in the Travers or seeing him in the, or do you not really care?
I'd love to face California Chrome. You know, I don't think he's going to run in any of the races that we're going to run in anytime soon because they're restricted to 3-year-olds and he's a 4-year-old.
Okay.
The race, like the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is when we take older horses, he could for sure be in there. I'd love to take him on. You know, what better competition could be two Derby winners taking on each other? Derby and Preakness winners, in fact. I have my own opinion. I won't come out, you know, I'll be excited to take him on, but,
How about an old-fashioned match race, Justin?
Yeah,
an old-fashioned match race.
hey, my ears are all open. I'm open to all ideas, you know, or just whatever's best for the horse, best for the racing industry at the time.
Well, you know what? We'll have you both show up on trains like the old days. You know, you can wear clothes from the 1920s. And we'll have the old announcers there.
Okay. And make it happen.
Well, Justin, we can't thank you enough for joining us on a Friday morning. What is the rest of your day like? Have you already been to the track?
I actually went to the track early in the morning, looked at some of my 2-year-olds training, which is fun. Now I got to head back to the office. You know, I got to go to office work.
He's a college graduate. He's in the grind now. So you're,
right.
you're
in the grind.
Partying's over now.
Well, listen, yeah, please, exactly. please give American Pharoah a carrot from us and tell him that we love him.
Will.
We're huge fans.
I will for sure. I'll see him next week. So I'll definitely do that.
Please do, and please bubble wrap him while you're there. Just
yeah,
throw
well,
some
we
bubble
are,
wrap.
We are, trust me. He's like gold.
All right, Justin, thanks so much for joining us. You have a great
Thank
day.
Thank you very much.
You All right. too. Bye. All right, fantastic. Well, George Morris is a man who definitely needs no introduction. You just have to say the name George and people know, horse people know who you're talking about. He's the founding father of hunt seat equitation. He has represented the United States as a rider and a coach. In 59, he won the gold medal in the Pan Am Games, won a team silver at the 1960 Rome Olympics. He has ridden on 8 winning Nations Cups teams. His students have medaled in the 84, 92, 96, and 2004 Olympic Games. He's the chef to keep for numerous winning teams, and it is an absolute honor to have him on the show. Good morning, Mr. Morris.
Good morning.
Thank you
I'm
so much.
I'm very honored to be asked to be on the show, Jennifer.
Jennifer did a great job finding you, and we really appreciate you coming on. I am Jamie, and then Glenn is also here, and we are so thrilled to have you on. It's an honor to have you, so thanks.
I'm afraid she gave away my era and my age, which is all right. We talk about the 50s.
I thought you were 2 when you did that. So
exactly.
You're a young spring chicken now, but I do, you know, I submitted for a lot of listeners to ask if they could ask you one question, what would it be? And most of the questions, George, came wanting to know more about you and your personal life. So I would
more
love
about
to,
my personal life.
Yes, I thought they would ask training questions, and we will get to some of those. But everybody was just kind of more curious to know who the man, the myth, the legend actually is in real life behind the sunglasses. So, do you mind if I ask you?
No, I always have the sunglasses. I'm usually outdoors, and it's usually very bright. And I'm really quite addicted to sunglasses now.
I think it's so you can roll your eyes at everybody without us seeing.
Well, I do a lot of eye rolling for different reasons.
Well, tell us, what was life like growing up for you?
Well, I had a very lucky upbringing. I grew up in New Canaan, Connecticut, which is a suburb, as everybody knows, of New York City. Fairfield County is more New York City than Connecticut. I grew up at the Oxford Hunt Club. I started actually at the New Canaan Mounted Troop in New Canaan, then moved to the Oxford Hunt Club in Darien, which was a wonderful place to start riding and start associating with horses. We had 2 great professionals at Oxbridge, Otto Ukuroff, Patty Ukuroff's father, who was a great leader of the club, and Miss V. Felicia Townsend, who without her I'd never be riding because I was very, very timid, and she kept me on the lead line longer than anybody else at the club had ever been. It was about a 6-month period on 2 horses named Mitzi and Mittens, and they were of the living dead variety.
We've all ridden them.
So she got me going.
Fantastic. And then when did you get off the, 6 months later, you get off the lead line. And I have heard that throughout your years and years of showing and competing that you might have a little bit of a case of the nerves. Is that true?
Well, if you said tomorrow that I was going to ride in the pre-green under saddle, I would have a sleepless night.
Really?
I always had nerves. I mean, every time I give a clinic, every morning I have nerves that I'm not going to be good enough or I can't do it or, you know, that's my makeup. But luckily, as my other trainer, leader trainer, Gordon Wright said, my stage fright works for me. Some people it works against, some people it helps. And luckily, when I go in to perform on a horse or off horse teaching, usually my stage fright, the adrenaline helps me, and I rise to the occasion. But I don't ever think I'm going to rise to the occasion leading up to the point of rising to the occasion. That's why I always try to tell people the facts of my life because it helps other people.
Absolutely, it does. So your biggest weakness could be your biggest strength at the same time.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow, that's amazing. And speaking of stage fright, I also might have been doing a little research, and I wanted to tell people maybe what they don't know about you is tell everybody about your stage experience.
Well, when I was on the team in my very early 20s, I met some theater people through the horse shows. Tab Hunter is still a great friend of mine. Ronnie LaRoche at Fairfield, her aunt was Rosalind Russell, Mary Martin of South Pacific would come to my family's cocktail party. She lived near New Canaan. Larry Kurt, the original Tony in West Side Story, became a very good friend of mine. So I had very interesting theater friends, and I was getting itchy to try something else after I had been on the team and been to Rome in the 1960 Olympics, as you said. And I was itchy to find a career, and I didn't think horses should be. At that time, people didn't often go into the horse business. And at Oxbridge, there was a very sweet lady that nobody paid any attention to because she had a three-gated saddle horse, and everybody else had hunters. And I befriended her. She was lovely, and her name was Miss Edie Van Cleve, and she was, it turned out, the top agent at Music Corporation of America on Madison Avenue. And she had three clients, Montgomery Clift, Grace Kelly, and Marlon Brando. Those were her clients.
Wow.
So she was my pal, and she reluctantly, she didn't want me to go into the theater, but she, as I pushed and pushed and pushed, after the Olympics, she got me into the neighborhood playhouse school of the theater on East 54th Street in New York. And I had a great 2 years there. It was a two-year school and a very interesting two summers at summer stock. And if these horse people think they know how to work, try summer stock. That'll really teach people how to work.
Wow.
Because you don't ever sleep. You're performing, you're rehearsing, you're selling tickets, you're setting up advertising, you're painting, you're doing everything in the world that you literally for the 8 or 10 weeks you don't sleep. And that really teaches you something about work. After that, everything's quite easy. So that was I did a little TV, and then really my passion for the horses pulled me back. So I went back to the horse business.
Did you find that your time, real quick, Jamie, I owned an acting company for a long time and have been in theater for a long time. And I found that theater experience has helped me in everything I've done in life.
Oh, no question. No question. I had a very hard time before the theater speaking in public, going to USCT fundraisers, and I had a very, very hard time. It was almost impossible. I would say the theater got me over that and also helped my teaching career immensely.
Wow. So what was the catalyst to get you back to the horse world? Did you just miss riding? Did you miss teaching?
Well, I thought I could be a working actor. I didn't think I could be a star. And Warner Brothers at that time had these 5-year contracts. And I met a guy who had just come back from California 5 years, and he was sort of in limbo and done nothing. And that, now he was late 20s. And I figured if I picked up on that opportunity, that might happen. And I'd be in my late 20s. And, you know, I wouldn't be a great actor, and the horse business would have been left behind, and I'd be really nowhere. So I always try to follow my instincts. And I always had inside me this passion for horses. So Jessica Newberry, now Rantzhausen, her mother met me at the Washington Show and invited me up there with Jessica near Lake Placid, or Sable Forks, where they had a wonderful dressage trainer coming from Denmark, Gunnar Andersen. So we had a wonderful year with very high-level dressage horses. I took jumpers up there, and even we had a few hunters. I even got Jessica riding a hunter for that summer, which she did beautifully. Oh, she did it beautifully, beautifully.
Of course.
So that's how I got back to the horse business.
Now, we have a couple listener questions, and I think that this kind of goes right to where you are. Robin wanted to know who your lifetime horse was, that one horse that really was the most special to you, or is.
Well, I've had, luckily, I've had quite a few. This wonderful horse Harry DeLayer loaned to me called St. John. He was off the racetrack. He came through the sales. I think they paid $1,500 for him. And he was just a naturally very, very gifted jumper. He was a weedy 15 3½ thoroughbred gelding. He was bay. He was very narrow. In fact, when I jumped big fences, I had to shorten my stirrups very short because the end of the rein would catch in my toe, or I'd even brush a jump unless my stirrup was so small. But he had an enormous heart. Beautiful stride, beautiful mouth, snaffle mouth, and he was extremely careful, no matter how fast he went. We never really knew if he had Olympic scope. He was not so much a Grand Prix of Aachen horse as a Grand Prix of, let's say, White City horse, mm-hmm. or Madison Square Garden horse. You never thought of him as a massive, jumping massive fences. So, you know, we never knew about him as an Olympic horse till right before the Olympics. I had another horse called Night Owl, who's very, very scopy, not as careful. And Bert DeNemeth was really the night before. I had these two wonderful horses for the Olympics, but they're totally different. And because Rome, the rails were very thin, the jumps were very delicate, the rails were very thin, and the distance was very crappy. They were very crappy in Rome. It's a very different show than Aachen, for example. So just right at, we waited, and at the end, Bert and I made the lucky decision to use St. John. And so he proved that he was an Olympic horse, because we weren't sure if he had quite that much scope. But he, for that kind of an Olympic Games, or the way they build them today, there's no question he had Olympic scope.
Oh, yeah. Well, you made a good decision, that's for sure, because that was your Olympic meddling horse. But I got to ask you another question from a listener, is heading to your teaching. If you could eliminate, Avery wanted to know, if you could eliminate one bad habit from all riders, what would that be?
Low hands.
Really?
Low hands.
To keep them low or don't keep them low?
No. A straight line from the rider's elbow to the horse's mouth almost all the time.
Great. Great. Now, I know that we are starting to run out of time, unfortunately, but I could keep talking to you if you have a couple more minutes.
Well, you're very sweet. girl, you can keep talking to me until I go back to my next horse.
Well, I was going to ask you, since you do have so much experience at the track, I mean, just every type of horse, what do you think the most difficult type of horse to train is? Not breed per se, but just the type.
Cold. Heavy and cold.
Heavy.
A heavy horse physically. It's you know, it's like turning a heavy truck or stopping and starting a heavy truck versus a Ferrari. St. John was a Ferrari. Authentic was a Ferrari. You know, should have fly Ferraris. Hot blood. You don't want to get far from the blood, the thoroughbred blood.
Gotcha.
So I would say heavy, physically a heavy structured horse, and a cold horse, one that lacks animation. Those are the hardest horses to train.
Okay. What do you think, Mr. Morris, is your secret to success?
Well, my secret is, if I've had success, is my I'm passionate about riding, horse management. Of course, showing was always the test of, in my day, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, you go to a horse show as a test to see where you were compared to your fellows. You know, it was not an addiction. It was I don't do this for the competitive part of it. I'm known for the competitive part of it, but that's the last interest I have of it. I love beautiful horse care. I love picking out horses. I love young horses. I love difficult horses. I love riding. I still ride, when I give these clinics, I ride between 8 and 10 strange horses a week at these clinics. I love, and I'm quite selfish. I sometimes do more riding in the clinics than teaching. That's why I'm in the sport. I'm not in it for the VIP tent. I grew up with all the social advantages. I'm not in it for any social reasons. I'm certainly not for any monetary reason. I make a good living, but that's not why I'm in it. Mm-hmm. I'm certainly not in it for the blue ribbon, although I've won lots of blue ribbons. and if you're really in it for the right reasons, all of those things come. You meet all the people you've heard about. You win the classes. You win prize money. But that, you can't go into the journey is too difficult to go into it for those reasons, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so which gives you more satisfaction, the riding or the teaching?
Well, I got into the sport for the riding.
Gotcha.
That is my first love. Riding and training horses is my first love. I put up the teaching. I put up the time to teach other people to learn how to do it, which is very, very, very few people ever get it. Really get it.
Right.
So I put up with it. No, I love teaching. I'm a passionate teacher. But if I had to choose, which I don't because I do both, I would choose riding. Right after I've just ridden a horse, squeeze this radio interview in, and then I'm going to race back to ride another one, and then I'm going to ride another one. And, you know, maybe in 3 or 4 weeks, I'll be up to about 6 a day again.
Well, George, we certainly appreciate you squeezing us in today. I have one last question for you, and I think it's a good one to end with. This was by Mary, one of our listeners. She says, what do you hope your legacy will be? What do you hope people will say about you in 100 years?
I hope, I don't care if they liked me or didn't like me, but I hope they will say he never lowered his standards.
Oh my gosh, I'd give you the biggest hug right now if I could. And I just can't thank you enough for
That's
coming on.
That's all I care about is my standards.
Wow.
You can find your website, too, is at ghmclinics.com. You can find more about George Morris there. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's a great pleasure and a great honor to be asked. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye.
Well, there you can breathe again now.
How did you know?
Because I can tell amazing. When you're not breathing.
That was amazing. An amazing guy. Oh my gosh. He was so nice too. And he was so honest and just, oh my gosh, just stuff you just don't ever hear. Just hear him talk like that is just really
and the one beautiful. Thing you never hear him talk about, and I'm glad you got into it, was, you know, his life, you know, yeah. his personal life. And I think you got him a little nervous there. He got quiet when you first said that, because I don't know what he was thinking at that point, but, you know, so cool. Very cool. We've had a good couple of weeks between Charlie Daniels and George Morris interviews. It's been a good couple of weeks. All right, all yours, Jamie.
Wait, I'm sitting here talking to Monty, and he goes, you know, where we're sitting used to be a saloon, and there was a veranda, and so Frank Sinatra and I sat out here looking at the horses. I'm like, you can't drop that bomb in my lap and expect me to move on? That's amazing.
Good morning, Monty.
Hi there.
Come a little closer
here. Get closer.
Yeah, I yes. need to be a little closer.
1, 2, 1, 2.
That's better, yes. Good morning. So I'm so glad you got up this morning to join us.
Well, I get up every morning, but I'm glad to join you.
Well, good.
This might be a little earlier than he likes, but...
You better have Pat, you know, keep the guard handy at the gate, because I think Jamie wants to kidnap you on the way out, so...
Yeah.
Wants to what?
I said that I wanted to kidnap you and take you
kidnap
home.
Kidnap me? Oh, my word. I'm a bad hauler, though, so... I get to climb in the walls.
Oh, my goodness. I'll give you some equine chill or something, get him to calm down, put him in there. Well, what I thought we would do today, Monty, and thank you so much for coming, is first I was going to let you talk about the course a little bit and kind of give us a synopsis of what's gone on in the past couple weeks.
Well, I have to tell you that it's not really a course. It's more like a family meeting and just sample of what we can do with really challenging horses, and we've had some extra challenging horses, and to just figure out how to meet their needs without demanding from them at all. And it's just been fantastic. We've had several countries represented in the group here, and enormous number of issues have come up that are educational. And remember that we don't really learn till we make mistakes. And if we make mistakes enough, you know how to buy a bad horse? Easy to buy a bad horse, isn't it?
Yeah.
The problem is to buy a good horse. And how do you figure out how to buy a good horse? You buy a lot of bad horses. That's a mistake, you see. And if we learn from our mistakes, that's the key to learning. And today's the last day, and it's a bittersweet time for me. I don't want this to end at all.
It has been absolutely amazing, and the weather and the company. And you know what's really funny, Glenn, is I say things all the time. You guys know I quote movies all the time, random movies, or make a joke, and most of these people don't get my jokes because they're not American. And I'm not as funny to other people in other countries.
Well, it's good we're doing an American-based radio show then.
Yes, absolutely. I'm appreciative for our international listeners. And I do realize now that you guys probably don't think I'm funny. So appreciate you guys tuning in. So what I thought we would do, because I talked a little bit Wednesday, Monty, about the help that you've given me with Thor and the help I'm getting with Edward with kind of desensitizing. And so I got such a huge response from that. So many people writing, thank you, thank you, thank you for giving us training tips. So I thought, who better than to just talk to the horse about it? And I had listeners late last night. I mean, it was 9 o'clock on the East Coast when I posted a post to, and sent out a couple messages. Do you have a question for a training tip? Well, I got 37 responses by bedtime. Oh, so I haven't even looked at all of the ones this morning. So I picked out a couple that we could probably just get started and see how far we get. And I'm so excited to learn. And this is going to be I can actually go back and listen to this one when I have problems, Glenn. I will listen to the show again. So my first question comes, are you ready? You good? Do you need coffee? You ready? The first question comes from Celeste, and it's kind of a two-part question. How do you stop a horse from spooking, and can spooking be an evasion, or is it always genuine fear?
Well, no horse can lie. And to spook from something that you're not spooky of would be a lie. Mm-hmm. So when the horse does something, it's genuine. And some people will say, oh, he's a genuine horse, or he's not genuine, he's faking it. And they can't do it. What we have to do is look inward to figure out what it is that's causing the spooking and how we overcome it, because it's always real.
Okay. And so how would you suggest, like, say I'm riding my horse and it spooks. And it's probably spooked 100 times. Why? What do you do as a reaction? Do you just ride on? Do you ignore it? Do you do circles? What do you do?
Well, the one thing you don't do, and it's a bad thing to tell people what not to do, because that's kind of like the Mona Lisa theory. But what you don't do is let your pulse rate go up. You don't startle with the horse. If you startle with the horse, then they have two ways to be spooked. And they will see that same object the next time, then read what you're going to do, and then spook again. So you do have to, for a certain amount, ignore. But it's just a matter of you saw it too, and then you settle yourself. You learn to breathe. Diaphragmatic breathing is a huge part of what I do. And remember this, that if you're doing your work right, repetition is your greatest friend. If you're doing your work wrong, repetition is your greatest enemy. And doing your work wrong includes driving your adrenaline up, your pulse rate up. It's very destructive to the horse's thinking process. So keep your adrenaline down, and that'll be a big part of doing your work right. And then repetition, repetition, repetition when you've got it right. Mm-hmm. You've seen me load horses that wouldn't load, and they load. They load fine. But the owner has been going up that ramp, looking them in the eye, that means go away, and getting their adrenaline up because they've been through this process so many times before, and then the horse doesn't load. And I get the horse right on the dually halter and coming up off of it and get them right that way, and then go to the trailer and just expect them to go in, walk in, and they oftentimes just walk in behind me in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds. So, spooking is a real problem, and it's generally a problem just as much for the rider as it is for the horse.
Okay, so Monty, I have a quick question here for you. I'm a driver, and I have a Hackney pony that has a spooking issue. Probably once every... By the way, it's very hard to not keep your adrenaline go up. I understand you're not supposed to, but boy, when you're in the moment, that's a difficult situation.
The magic.
Yeah, exactly. Especially, you know, you got a pony bolting, and he's heading, you know, down the wrong side of the road. Your adrenaline does go up naturally there, but so it's very difficult to do that. I'm getting better at it. I'm really working at trying to be calm in the situation. When you he spooks usually at rustling leaves, something that's horses running in a field, anything that he thinks horses are coming up behind him. So what you say about genuine, I think he's genuinely scared. You know, he's genuinely scared. How do you work through that?
You set up the circumstances as close as you can to the thing that spooks him. And for instance, the rustling leaves. What about a stable stall, a box stall, with bedding of leaves? Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, and he walks through them, and you can get leaves. A lot of come over here.
We
if
have
you
plenty
need
of those.
and then get a leaf blower. And a leaf blower is pretty scary itself.
Right.
But blow those leaves around the stall for a while and see what happens. And you can put a fan up on the wall that's an oscillating fan that moves back and forth. And it'll rustle the things that spook your horse. It could be shopping bags on the bottom of the stall. It could be shopping bags hanging from strings from the rafters if up above is a problem. and an oscillating fan up there. It's not a big deal to get one of those and fix it to the top of the wall. And then that isn't good enough, because then that's his stall and that's okay. Now you're down the side of the road and here comes the leaves. So you put some leaves down the side of the road and you have somebody with a leaf blower and you drive by it several times blowing leaves at your pony. Now, as you do that, you may set it up so that you're not, absolutely not, in traffic.
Right.
And you may set it up so that you're not hooked to a carriage that's going to get upside down on him.
Right.
So you have your harness and everything that you're doing as safe as possible when you do these things.
Okay.
Gosh, he's so smart. That's the thing, is if your horse has an issue, Monty's so good at figuring out a way to recreate that in a schooling session. The next question comes from Uta, and she has a horse. What do you do for a horse that is buddy sour and or whinnying for friends while being ridden?
Separation anxiety.
Yes, separation anxiety.
I have a chapter in From My Hands to Yours on separation anxiety, and I'll try not to use the whole chapter in the answer here, but you have to separate the horses. And, I know, you've got a small place and you have two horses, and I know all of the problems with that, but you also have some friends, and they have horses. Generally, horse people have horse friends, and you exchange horses. You literally exchange horses, and he stays with them one night, and their horse stays with you one night, and you start to separate those horses. And you tie them up on a rubber floor so that they don't tear their feet up. And you let them dig that hole, if they can do it, through a rubber mat. And you tie them up and let them get over it. They've got to go through the problem and get over it. And then you pay them for that by taking them down and taking them for a ride and let them settle. But separation anxiety is covered, a full chapter on it, and it's not a terribly difficult thing to overcome.
Robin sent in a question and said, how do you correct a horse that bites? She has a 3-year-old and he's a pony and he's a little stinker. And I guess it's getting very mouthy with her. I've had clinicians say, oh, you whop him in the, mouth, or you spook him half to death. And I'm just curious what the gentle method is.
Well, the thing is that I get this so many times. And the mistake was made a long time ago, feeding treats from the hand. When you connect food to the human body, you will get a horse that bites. It's actually training the horse to bite. Oftentimes I ask them, does he bite you when you're giving him the treat? No, he's fine when I'm giving him the treat, but I have to keep giving him treats. Well, isn't that the child in the shopping cart that's pulling all the stuff off the shelves the same way? So you have to deal with that. I've had trainers say you put a nail between your fingers and then you jab them with your fist with the nail going into their lips.
Oh,
that's a good one. And then we want to deal with head shy, don't we? So no, you don't feed from the hand. And then the idea is to get their brain in a different place. So if you just reach over and tap their shin with your boot every time they go to reach and bite you. If you tap the shin with your boot, you'll take their brain to a different place. I'm not asking you to cause them pain. It's not pain.
It's redirection.
Redirecting their attention to a little tap on the shin. And pretty soon, about the 7th or 8th time, they will go to bite you, and then they'll look down at their shin and stop the act of biting. So that's my advice to you about a biting horse.
That is absolutely genius. Okay, Robin, that should certainly help you answer your question. So I know I talked to you about this before. I didn't get the answer, but you said you have a very good way to help a horse to stop rearing. And I believe that this is I've worked with a horse that reared, and I thought, well, it's a pretty dramatic thing. It probably doesn't happen. I got 3 people asking me, how do you stop a horse that rears?
Yeah, and actually, that's one of the easiest things that I ever work with, is the rearing thing. You can stop virtually any horse from rearing almost instantly. Horses don't go where they can't see. They don't like to go where they can't see. So there's a thing called a pacifier. It looks like a set of blinkers. It comes with a hood, but it's like a tea strainer over the eye of the horse. It's a very strong metal screen that is dome-shaped right over the eye, each eye of the horse. Now, that gives you an enormous advantage because you have this goggle on him that's made of the screen, and you take some Gorilla Tape and you tape off any place that you don't want them to see. So the rearing horse, you tape off the upper half. They can't see up. They can see where their feet go, and they can see all the traffic, and they can see the fences and everything from the side, but they can't see up, so they don't go up. It's a very easy thing to teach a horse to do, not a very easy thing to keep a horse doing. And when I was a child, I worked with five different Palominos that they called Trigger. Trigger 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they had to rear because Roy Rogers liked his horse to rear and wave his hat at the crowd. But they don't like to keep rearing because it's a lot of work. So you can stop a horse from rearing easily. But it's called a pacifier. It's in my book, From My Hands to Yours. You tape off the upper half. The horse that lugs left or the horse that lugs right, check them out physically and then tape off the outer portion of each of those, and they won't tug you left or right. But oftentimes, that's a physical problem.
Now, will they have to wear the pacifier for the rest of their life? I actually know the answer to this, but that is the next question.
Yeah, and sure, that's a thought. But they don't rear, so you're riding them, and you have this on them for, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. I have some horses in high-level dressage, and dressage is one of the things that they learn to rear in as a discipline quite easily because they are often held from going forward and then asked to go forward hard with the legs or a whip. And the next thing is popping up. And then when they pop up, you go defensive. You yield to them. So they say, oh, I'm in charge and here I am rearing. So I have some high-level dressage horses that stopped it. Once you get them and you understand the reason why they were doing it, once you get them not doing it, then you can take your razor blade or something off the horse and cut about 1/8 of an inch off about once a week for a while. And pretty soon you don't have anything on and they're not popping up.
Fascinating. So just slowly begin to remove the tape from the pacifier. And I've seen it. It's almost like blinkers for a horse. You know, they strap it over the racehorses and they can't see bum. But this is a full cup, like a mesh strainer. And it's over each eye and they look like the fly, you know. And that's what it looked like. And you slowly bring it away and all of a sudden the horse is kind of forgotten how to rear.
Works a treat. It really is a charm.
And I know that you used that as well in a online university video. And you guys can find out so much more if you go to MontyRobertsUniversity.com. Right now, and you know, they don't pay me to say this, but I'm a huge fan of the university, as y'all know. And if you go to MontyRobertsUniversity.com, there's a free pass. It's a subscription. It's not very much money. It's totally worth it. But there's a free pass. And I think the promo code is DayPass. And you can get an entire free day, watch as many videos as you want and decide whether this is something. There's over 350 videos, so you're not going to get through all of them in one day. So you're going to have to decide whether it's totally worth it. Definitely, definitely do it.
We should tell them what it costs because in America, it's about 26 cents a day, and that's about the cost of one stick of gum per day. And yeah. And in England, then it's about 19p per day and so forth and so on.
I didn't know the P was a money.
19 pence.
Oh, my. Sorry.
All right, Jamie. 19 pence a
day. It's early.
Yes,
oh, my
that's
God.
Right.
I only had one cup of coffee. Okay. So another one that I got from Stephanie is And I know Stephanie very well, and we've always competed together. And she, her question in general was, how do you help a horse that has anxiety at competitions? And to her extreme example is, her horse has anxiety in the stall at shows. When she takes him out, he does whinny, but he has extreme stall anxiety to the point where he kind of upsets the other horses around him because he paces and he moves around and he kind of freaks out a little bit. She does very well when she's riding him, aside from the whinnying. So you laugh. Do you have a solution?
Yeah, well, first of all, we deal with a lot of horses that have anxiety at shows. And I say, when does he have anxiety? Well, when I'm in a class, especially if it's a high-level class, he just gets really nervous and ratty. I can go in the little classes and not do so. What in the world are they thinking about? This is a situation where you have to say, my horse reads the program. He knows when there's a high-level class. He knows when there's a low-level class. No, no, no. It is the rider. And the rider goes to the show and gets tense. And so the horse is an animal of synchrony. They will synchronize with the rider, and they get tense. Now, the stable is a different thing. That's a new place. Mm-hmm. And you have friends. And they have horses, and you go to a new place. Every little local show you can get to, you go. And try to figure out how to tie your horse up with some rubber mats under him and let him go berserk until he settles down. And when he's standing there resting a foot, give him a drink, give him a rub, saddle him up, ride him around, and go home. But you have to go enough to strange places so that the horse becomes, when you're doing your job right, the horse will respond to you. So you have to give the horse an opportunity to repeat these things, and they will go calm about it.
Okay. And the whinnying, do you have any suggestions for a horse that screams? Because in dressage, and I'm sure in the undersaddle Western classes too, whinnying is kind of a deduction.
Yeah, when your horse, Jamie, is with you, they stop the whinnying. Now, imagine, I go all over the world, and I've done more than 9,000 horses now in front of public audiences. And when they come into a building, they're all in a strange place. And oftentimes, they're starters that have never been trained before. So they bring a friend along with them, and that horse is out in the stable. And they come in whinnying like a banshee, you know, and the audience is going crazy because the horse is near my microphone and it's over the public address system, and then the horse hears the echo in the building and keeps whinnying. But 95% of them will do no more whinnying at the end of about a 20 to 30 minute session because they're with me. Mm-hmm. And they stop the whinnying. So when your horse is whinnying and looking for a friend, give them a friend. That's you. And do the things right, and they will join with you. Join up is that act. So you can take that down. When you're doing your job right, repetition is your greatest friend. So you need to repeat these acts of going to a strange place and show them that there isn't any reason for them to become excited about it.
You know, I'm hearing a thread through all of this, Monty, and the thread I'm hearing is that as humans, and I don't think this is a new thing. I think kind of humans have always been this way. We're always in a hurry to accomplish things much faster than the animals in our lives are in a hurry to accomplish things.
I've heard about 100 times this week, take your watch off and throw it away. That is exactly what we've heard a lot of.
Yeah. When I was doing the shy boy thing, I remember Caleb Twisselman, a great kid, was with me on the shy boy thing. And I sat down at the campfire that night and I said, give me your watch. And he said, give you my watch? Yeah. So he gave it to me and I said, I'm going to put it in this little bag. And then I said, do you have any money on you? Well, $22 or something like that. And I said, give it to me and I'm going to put it in this bag and you'll get it when we're finished. And then I said, take off your buckle and give me your belt buckle, which he did, but reluctantly. And I put it in the bag. And he said, now what's all that about? And I said, well, horses don't care what time it is. They don't care how much money you have. And they don't care what you have won in the past. It's what you do with me now that counts. So all of those human things that we place importance on, The horse doesn't place any importance on that. We must deal in their world if we meet their needs.
Gosh, that's interesting. I mean, I'm telling you how much I've learned here. Just and you just, like I told you before, you asked what I'm taking away from this, and it was just slow down and breathe and break everything down. Like he said, okay, the next one is Lois.
Well, let me just pursue that one for a little bit yet.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm excited. So I think part of the problem is that we feel in life, in everything else we do at work, at your job, if you don't get something done, you're made to feel guilty about it or you're reamed out. So we take that through other parts of our lives, which includes our horses, because that, you know, that's not something 99% of us do full time. So we take that, and if we don't accomplish what we set out to do that day, we feel guilty, right? Because that's the way we're trained to feel when we don't accomplish anything else we're supposed to do in our lives.
Yeah, you're just going ahead with your life,
right?
Being a human.
Right, right. So that is something that you really have to consciously teach yourself, don't you?
Absolutely. You need to become horse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sitting next to one right now. all right. Another question came from Lois. Gosh, I love that some of these questions, I already know the answers to, and I would have had a problem with them two weeks ago. My horse refuses to lunge to the left.
Oh,
what can I do? I know we worked on this yesterday, all week.
Yeah, and first of all, I'm not for single line lunging. I think it's the second worst piece of horsemanship on earth.
Why?
Single line lunging will cause your horse to travel with his head to the outside of the circle. There is no way to single line lunge a horse that I know of whereby the horse doesn't learn to go with his head outside the circle.
Because they pull on you and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, they just balance the weight of the line, if nothing else. And they learn to go around with their head on the outside. And when they do, their spine is curved in the opposite arc to the circle they're making. And that pulls every joint, every ligament, every tendon in the wrong way. It's asymmetrical for them. So I don't believe in single line lunging. If you have a set of side reins on and you shorten the inside rein a little bit and have some elastics on it, then your horse will travel with his head slightly to the inside of the circle and be a lot better. But free lunging is better yet with the side reins on. But if your horse won't go in a particular direction, we human beings say, I'm going to make him go in that direction till he's, you know, 10 years old, and then I'll get it. No, go the way the horse wants to go.
This is like, Lori, this is amazing what you're about to hear, because I have seen this work. So you let the horse go.
Yeah, and most horses like to go to the right, on the right lead, more than they do to the left. So you go on the right lead and you say, no, don't go left, just go right and keep working. And then you let them go left. And when they go left, you only go a circle or circle and a half. And then you overtly turn them back to the right side. It's your action. And then they say, oh, that's good. I'll go right. Yeah, go right a lot. I'd like you to go right a lot. And most of the horses that we've worked here on the farm in this past clinic have wanted to go right. And I've shown them how to get the horse to choose the left direction. And they choose the left direction because they've worked harder to the direction that they want to go. And you do want to check your horse's physicality. You want to know that that horse isn't in pain to go in the direction that you're asking. But once you know that they're okay physically, then this will work. It's unbelievable what a miracle it is. And I grew up with people that said, oh, you make that bugger go to the left. If you get a whip or whatever you have to do, then it's just wrong.
So what we've seen with the Mustangs this week is, especially Beauty, when we're doing join up, we each get in there and get to practice doing join up with him. He will run to the right as long as the day is, just right. And then you turn him to the left and you can get about a circle out of him before he stops and wants to turn back the other way. And as the week has progressed, he goes left just as much as he goes right. Now, I mean, when we sent the rider off on him yesterday, he immediately turned and ran to the left. So just let him, you want to go that way? Okay, we'll go. Giddy up. You know, and eventually they're going to want to go. But Monty, you talked about lunging. You are a bigger, obviously free lunging in a round pen is perfect, but you also talk about line driving as as kind of more of a way to lunge your horse.
Yeah, well, if you put two lines on and you bring one around the hips, several things happen. One is the horse is getting gentler about things around its hips. But the other is that the horse is bilaterally symmetrical, so you have weight on both sides of his head, and his tendency is to keep his head in front of him then and not stick it to the outside of the circle. So double lunging or double line lunging, two lines on, is far, far better than single line lunging.
Okay. Last question, then we'll let you go up and have some breakfast. Is that good with you, Glenn?
Good with me. I'm not arguing with Monty.
Hillary wrote, what equine body language cues do humans interpret incorrectly the most? So when a horse says something to us, most common thing that we interpret incorrectly?
Well, that's a difficult question because we have different cultures, we have different people, and everybody does interpret the equus language differently because of our own personalities. And it doesn't really matter which one we interpret the most incorrectly. We generally incorrectly transpose most of them. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, the horse that wants to go away, and I think maybe this is the most, the horse that wants to go away, we want to go get hold of him and keep him from going away. And the best thing you can do is send him away. Mm-hmm. Send him away a lot when he's tired of going away. Use that language of your eyes, your fingers, your shoulders to draw him back. Don't go catch your horse. Let your horse catch you. Mm-hmm. And when he comes to you in the field, then you have accomplished your goal. Now, I just did one for a professional polo player, very nice lady professional polo player. And she paid a lot of money for a really high-level polo horse. And she couldn't take it to the matches because they couldn't catch it in the field. And it's out there with about 10 horses, and they catch all 10 of them, and she won't come near them, and they can't catch her in the field. And I said, no, let your horse catch you. Yeah, fine. Good thing to say. Mm-hmm. Let your horse catch you. You can't do it. And in two sessions here on this farm, now she comes to her at the gate before the other nine come over there. And it changed her that rapidly. And I've gotten 4 or 5 letters from her saying, it's working, it's working, it's working. And that's so gratifying, you know.
So what did you do in that session? Was it a round pen session? Is it a free lunging? What?
We started out in the round pen and we rewarded her greatly with lots of rubbing and loving when she came to me for join up in the round pen. And then we progressively went to larger places and did the same thing in a large place. And you do have to walk some mileage to get it done. But we were in a place about 100 feet by about 50 feet, rectangular, normal little turnout, you know? And when it happened there, then it happened in the biggest field we had as well. So, not a terribly difficult thing to do. Let your horse catch you.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, that still comes back to that. The point that I think we're taking away from this today is she wanted to go play polo. She didn't want to spend 10 sessions trying to get her horse to come in. Come up to her. So it still comes back to what you said at the beginning, your takeaway, Jamie. I mean, it always keeps coming back to that, doesn't it? It's we got to do it on their schedule and make it work for them.
Yeah, you have no idea how many times I hear people say, oh, that's fine, but I don't have time for that.
Right.
Junk.
You probably hear that 100 times a day.
Yep. I hear it all the time. I don't have time for that. Oh, no. So you go ahead and spend an hour a day extra for the lifetime of the horse, rather than to spend a few hours in 2-day time or 3-day time to get the problem corrected. And then you have a lifetime with the horse without that problem. Mm. So it's a foolhardy sort of attitude to take, But it's human, and I understand what you're saying. We are humans, and we have a watch on, and we look at it, and you know, we're locked into this human body, and I'm not.
Well, let's hope we have thousands of people listening to this today. Like I am going, okay, I'm going to be more patient with my horse. So if we learned anything from Jamie's adventure at your farm, I think that's a great takeaway, isn't it?
It sure is. One more. I just got another one from a girl who really, really needs help. And this is from Shannon. And she says, if a horse is sticky in backing up and they won't increase their speed a little bit, what would you suggest? Do you just hold on to them and wait till they go back or what?
No. We want the horse to want to back up. So if you take some cattle panels or you have a narrow lane, if you ride them into a narrow place and ask them to back up, they generally want out of the narrow place. Mm-hmm. So they'll back up and stroke them and then ride back in it. I put some panels just about 1 meter apart or 3.5-4 feet, let's say, apart from the fence at the side of the pen or wall. And I ride them into this narrow hallway. You might make it 20 or 30 feet long and then close it off at the end by bringing the end of the panel over against the wall. And you ride them into this little area and then just pick your hands up very gently and step on your stirrups a little bit harder than normal and say back, 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 or whatever cue you want to give. It doesn't matter. They don't understand English, but you just give the same cue each time. And they'll back themselves out of that. And you can do it over and over again for, I say, maybe a half an hour today. And maybe for a week, you'd try it a little bit. And you'll have a horse that will back up readily, generously, and comfortably. You don't have to pull. You don't have to put a lot of pressure on. That's all in From My Hands to Yours as well, the book.
Get the book. Join the university. It's amazing how much all of this has just being here 2 weeks has changed my life. And Thor, Monty, is just a different horse. Having him stand in the driveway calmly yesterday while we were waiting on pictures. Oh, my gosh.
No, Thor is a perfect example of being a horse, which means he synchronizes with the animals around him. And he was synchronizing with Jamie every day. And Jamie wanted him to stand still. So she anxiously wanted him to stand still. So her muscles...
Dime me out. It's fine. Sell me out. Throw me under the bus. No. It's cool. It's fine.
It's no blame on you. But I think you saw it immediately that when she learned to just relax and let him make the mistake and then correct him for the mistake and leave him alone again and let him do his own work, Thor is, it's a miracle. What I'm seeing out there is an absolute miracle. She's cantering him around, crossing the arena. People are going around him with, you know, horses going every which direction. And he's just going along on the loosest rein you could ever imagine. And now in frame as well with a tighter rein and then loosen it. And he's still doing and stop in the middle of the arena facing the stable. And stand there with the reins, almost to his knees and not moving a foot. It's really a miracle.
It's not a miracle. It's your amazing incremental training that you do. And it gets me a little emotional because I you've not only taught me how to have these tools in my belt for Thor and for Edward, for every horse in the future. And you've definitely changed my life. And I want to thank you so much for having me. I see that you made a couple notes. Did you want to say anything else before we go?
No, I was just making some notes here to remember names and stuff so that, because I draw a blank at 80 years of age. I draw
I'm Jamie,
a lot of blanks. You're Jamie. Yeah, right at the top of the list. But we do have Canada represented here. We have England. We have Wales, which is part of England, but she doesn't say that. She says she's from Wales.
They don't think
Cardiff
they are. They
Wales.
Don't think they are. That's like a whole different language, too. Do you understand anything she says?
Yeah, she's pretty good. Okay. International.
Certain words, though, are hilarious. Do you have any paraffin or petrol? Like, what? Gas? She's like, gas? What's gas?
Yeah.
Like, just random stuff.
Yeah, and of course the U.S. is represented, as you know, and Hungary is even here. So, yeah, the people that I've worked with, they're real people. They really are. And this next week now, I go into a military one. And oftentimes these are not real people. They're remade people with the rigors of war. And that's a thing that I've been doing a lot more of recently. And it's one of the most gratifying things I've ever done in my life. And I'm making changes with them that is just, they're off the charts with success.
How, if I know a guy with PTSD who just recently even lost a job. He can't even really work right now. And his wife is a horse friend of mine. How does somebody go about getting signed up for these clinics, the military ones?
Well, the military ones are done through military people that we have on staff. Mm-hmm. And they're out there talking to people at these various bases up and down California. But they come in from New York. They come in from D.C., Tennessee, Georgia, and they hear about us online. Mm-hmm. Because we help them hear about these things online. But yeah, we have one girl that's finishing up at Harvard now in School of Psychology that was found homeless under a bridge in Washington, D.C., in a holy old sleeping bag. And she just won Miss Massachusetts.
Oh, really? Gosh.
Miss Massachusetts, and because she's up at Harvard. And it's just amazing. Her life was over. It was finished, and now it's beginning again. And she's a gorgeous African-American girl that was mistreated in Iraq. And it's wonderful. But they're no different from horses that we say, all these problems with horses that we have, they are connected to the problems of the world. And in the military, you get connected with those problems more than anybody wants to know. I was talking with a man last night who is a policeman with PTS, I call it injury, not disorder, PTSI, because it's an injury and not a disorder. It will heal. And this poor guy was on a call a few days ago, and a guy was trying to kill his wife in a motorhome, and he was trying to cut his own throat at the same time. And he was trying to break into the motorhome, and the guy took off the motorhome and ran over his foot. And so he's going to come to my clinic in on crutches and with a cast on his foot, but that's all right. We're going to work on his brain a little and not his feet anyways.
Absolutely. Well, it's such a wonderful thing what you do for humans and for horses, and do get the book From My Hands to Yours. It's all these training tips that we had, and you can get all this stuff at MontyRoberts.com. I got to get Thor a dually halter. He needs a bigger one because Edward has taken over the black one. And you guys check out Monty Roberts University, because it's just short 5-minute videos, and the stories of these horses on the ones that really build up, like Walter Won't Go Forward, where you see the pacifier used. It's just all very interesting. And just as horse people, it's just really fun to watch. It's way better than daytime TV, in my opinion, which is my other option when the kid naps. So I watch Monty Roberts University.
Yeah.
But we just can't thank you enough. And you've definitely changed my life with allowing me to be here. And I can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to so many people. And I love what I do. So I'm doing what I love.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Monty.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right,
bye-bye.
Take care.